If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
And so when you're hiring someone, you should be looking to hire someone who is better at you than the thing that you're trying to hand off. So if it comes to marketing, if you think that you're great at marketing, well, then don't hand that off. But are you? You know, like that's a question only you can answer, you know?
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Today's guest is Danny Coleman. Danny has helped other real estate firms grow their businesses by effectively hiring the right people. I don't know if any of you have ever struggled with this. I certainly have. I've got experience across a variety of industries, and I will tell you that's one of the things that's commonly been a weakness of my own is making the right hires. I've hired the right people and I've hired the wrong people, and I can tell you that it's far easier when you hire the right person the first time as opposed to the second and or third. That said, I'm excited to bring Danny on today because he really gives us insight in how to screen and effectively hire the right people the first time. Hey, Danny, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, man? It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you. It's glad to have you on board here. Of course, also, you know, awesome to have a fellow Tennessean on the show. Would love to hear kind of, you know, from your perspective, where you started, where you are now, how you got there, consulting, how all this kind of ties together. Just kind of give us the down and dirty on who you are and yeah, all of those things.
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Danny Coleman. I work now for the TSBDC, which is the Tennessee Small Business Development Centers. It's a nonprofit, federally and state funded, mostly that helps connect small businesses with resources that will help them. Previously to that, I was consulting privately, and my focus was on hiring and management. And before that is when I was full-fledged in real estate. I was COO for a real estate development company. We were based out of Nashville, but I got to work virtually from Columbia here. And so, a lot of my management and hiring experience was based on having to do it all without being there in person. And so there's a lot that I learned throughout that process in terms of how to communicate effectively and how to kind of properly find right people for the right seats in your business and it helped and scale. When I joined the team, I was the fifth man. There were two owners and then I was, I guess, employee number three. And then we scaled to about 12 people, did work in Tennessee, both and as well as Alabama and Georgia, or sorry, no, Alabama. So it was a good experience. The owners ended up going their separate ways. Kind of wanted to do different things. One owner continued to wholesale. The people that I had hired, he kept with them on the team for a long time until they kind of wanted to do their own things. And then, so the other guy then was who I kind of went with, not as an employee, but I was privately consulting. He became a big client, if you will. He became a real estate coach. So then, I worked with him to kind of help teach other people how to get into wholesaling and then how they could use wholesaling to keep and hold rental properties. So.
Gotcha. And were you guys wholesaling primarily residential properties? Were you wholesaling multifamily or what were you guys?
Residential. Yeah, pretty much residential. I think we did a handful of commercial properties, but our bread and butter was residential.
Gotcha. And so in this process, you took your team from 5 to 12 people, which is a pretty big jump. And these were all key team members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. And including that, we also, I guess people I didn't count in that number would be virtual assistants that we had in the Philippines. I think we had someone in North Africa as well at some point, too. So a really great experience in terms of challenging my ability to communicate, you know, with not only just across personalities, but across languages and those barriers. So.
Right. And do you have a background in this or is this something that you just kind of, you know, trial by fire and you figured it out as you went?
Trial by fire. I'm a proud college dropout. That said, I do intend to go back now that I know what I want to do. I'm not wasting my time and money, but yeah, it was all by experience. I've been in small business my whole life. I was homeschooled till 8th grade. And as anyone who's a homeschooler knows, you get to work early in that case. So I worked for, you know, small businesses pretty much my whole life. Had a few corporate stints. It really wasn't my cup of tea. And really kind of fell in love with small business when I worked for my father-in-law as a painting contractor out in California. And he hired me as a prep guy, just as a favor, because I was dating his daughter at the time, who I'm now married to with two children. So it worked out. But then, he was like, you know what, you're an okay painter, but I think you're probably better in management. And he was right. And so that was really my first experience getting to see you know, what it was like for, to manage a small business. You know, what were the different things you had to take care of? And, you know, you hear about departments in larger organizations. And so I realized in small business, one person probably, administers four different departments, if you will. And so you really kind of have to figure out how to wear multiple hats, you know, of course, and do that effectively.
Right, right. So talk to us about that. When you look at an organization, you know, coming maybe at it from the consulting side, when you look at an organization, like what's the first thing you do to analyze where someone is and kind of where they need to go in the hiring process? Like how do you take somebody that's in, you know, wearing all the hats and say, okay, this is the first one you're going to offload and here's who you're going to hire? Like how does somebody even go about that?
Sure. So I start with the owner and I ask the owner, what are all the different things that they're doing? And then I ask them, what are the things that you're doing that don't need to specifically be you doing them? And those are usually most things. And so we kind of take those things that they don't either want to do, because if you don't want to do something, even if you can, it doesn't matter. Like you're going to be not great at it and it's going to drain your energy. Right. So you need to offload those things. So teaching people how to delegate is kind of where I start. So it's like, here's what you're doing. Here's what your team needs to do. And then we look at those responsibilities and we group them into positions. And this position doesn't necessarily mean a full-time hire. It just means this is these group of tasks need to happen in order to achieve this result. And so we then kind of look, if they have an existing team, I'll kind of rehire, if you will, their team kind of into those new positions. And then if we see that there's any holes that need to be filled, then we go through the new hire process. So that's kind of where I start to try to help make sure that someone understands, one, the power of delegation, and two, how it's your grouping responsibilities in a thoughtful way is the only way to do it well. Because if you know, the way that business goes, you just kind of keep on, hey, you're going to do this now, you're going to do this now, you're going to do this now. And some of those tasks they may execute very well because it fits with their MO. It's their modus operandi, their strengths play to those things. But some of the other stuff you put on their plate might not play to their strengths. And so you're stressing them out. You're not going to get the best results. And, it creates friction in the business.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. What do you say to somebody who might have, you know, there's those tasks that you're not good at, but there's not enough work to really justify another hire. But it's like, hey, man, this is, you know, it's only 4 hours a week that I have to do this. Like, it feels like a lot of people run into those things where there's, you know, there's 10 4-hour a week tasks, but they're all different hats. Like, how do you group those tasks and then how do you offload those?
Well, I mean, one of the best things that's available to us now is, you know, completely scalable solutions with freelancers. So the freelance economy, the gig economy is, I think, the perfect answer to that. You can hire someone either in your country or in your area, locale, if you need them to be there. You know, at a scalable rate. If you put the job ad out there, you let people know this is a 5-hour-a-week job, 10-hour-a-week job, you know, whatever. You know, it's all about knowing what it is you need done and then looking for that. So you can go to like Odesk. This is a really popular place. You can still put the ad on Craigslist, put it out to your network if you want. You have no idea who's out there, especially now with COVID, who's needing to kind of find some supplemental things to do to, you know, support their income.
Right, right, right. Now that's fascinating. So walk us through that hiring process. Cause I think you said you've kind of developed your own kind of process for vetting people and bringing them on board. And yeah, walk us through that if you can.
For sure. Yeah. And so like I mentioned earlier, start with whatever it is you need done. So what is it that, what are these tasks that need to be done? And then group them together in ways that would play to strengths. So example might be someone who you need to do data entry type work is probably not going to be, should not be your marketing person. Your marketing person, if they're just placing an order for direct mail or something like that, or just doing something that isn't strategic, yeah, sure, that'll work. But if you need something strategic in the marketing department, like I need you to come up with copy or I need you to come up with graphic design and stuff like that, those two types of tasks don't usually fit well with the same person. So know what is that you need that's done tactical. It's a little bit more, you know, usually your lower dollar per hour wage. And then what's strategic, you know? And so strategic, the difference between those two, excuse me, I'll explain for a second. Strategic has to do with more reliance on judgment. So you're relying more on their judgment versus the tactical has more to do with reliance on a process. So a process, typically you can have anybody, not anybody, you can have anyone who likes to follow checklists and things like that, dot their I's, cross their T's. That's going to play well to their strengths. And usually that type of hire, you don't have to rely on their judgment as much. Versus someone who's strategic, you're being like, you know, when you ask someone to create copy for a direct mail piece or something like that, yeah, there's templates out there and stuff you can use. But if you want them to come up with something original, like you're going to need them. You're going to have to rely on their judgment, or else you're just going to find yourself micromanaging them to get what you think will actually work. But you have to trust their judgment. You have to rely on, you'd have to hire for that, hire for their judgment versus if the tactical, hire for their ability to execute tasks.
Now that's really complicated. Like how do you, at least in my mind it is, maybe you can break down that myth. Like I would think that getting inside, especially an entrepreneur's mind, because all of us, you know, out of the gate, we have to kind of wear all the hats at once. We are the marketing department. We are the tactical mass mailer. We are the, you know, data entry. Like we wear all these things at once, but getting inside and saying, okay, we're creating a, you know, a really unique copy piece or something with kind of this messaging behind it. How do you take what's in the entrepreneur's head and have them hire for that strategic hire? That just seems like it's, is there like a magic, you know, trick to it, or how does that
work? Well, it starts with being humble and realizing that there's other people out there that are going to be better at a lot of things than you are. And so when you're hiring someone, you should be looking to hire someone who's better at you than the thing that you're trying to hand off. So if it comes to marketing, if you think that you're great at marketing, well, then don't hand that off. But are you, you know, like that's a question only you can answer, you know? I think that really I think everyone kind of innately knows what they're good at, what they're best at. Right. And no one's good at any everything. There's a book I highly recommend by Brian Tracy called Delegation and Supervision. It's a very small, it's a short read. And one of the things he talks about in that book is if someone else can do something as 70% as good as you can, then it's worth delegating that to them. Because once you give this thing that's taken up 25% of your time, when you give it to this person to do full time, or at least maybe do, you know, half time or something like that, they're going to be solely focused on that. So they'll quickly exceed, they'll go from 70% to 100% to way better than you could ever do it, because they're going to be allowed to focus on that. When you're wearing multiple hats, you're not focusing really on anything. And so that's the problem, is you got to get rid of those other things that are distracting you from what your main focus should be, which if you're the owner, then it's growing the business.
What's a good way to vet somebody? Because it's a bit ethereal when you're hiring somebody for us. And I think I'd rather focus on the strategic positions and not so much the tactical. The tactical, I think, is a lot easier here. Follow this list. But what's a good way to vet someone that you're potentially bringing on to fill one of those strategic positions?
So that's where I really rely on the process that I developed. So like I said, starting with creating those job descriptions, position agreements was what we called them at the time, because we tried to keep them as a living document that evolved with the business. So accountability was there. But then your job ad. So how are you getting your job ad out there? How are you describing your business? How are you describing the culture of your business, which is a whole separate episode we could do about culture. But what is the culture of your business? Describe that. What does your business do? What is it that you're going to need them to do? And describe the type of person you're looking for. And so a lot of people stick with reality when they're trying to find the person they're looking for. Like, oh, no one's going to be able to do that, whatever. But no, describe your dream person, because the person who matches with that, when they read that, they're going to be like, that's me. They're talking about me. They're looking for me. I can add value to this place. That the culture sounds like a place where I'd like to work. And this sounds like a position that I could just really impress them with my abilities on. And then going from there, it's really the interview process. The process that I'm kind of overviewing the actual process I have. If someone wants that, we'll shout out my email at the end here and you can email me for it. But the interview process is where I spend the most time. So I have a lot of pre-screening steps that kind of take place before I get to the interview process, because I want to be able to have at least an hour for the interview if I'm doing a strategic position specifically. And so during that interview, I spend very little time on their resume or their skill sets. And I focus on who they are as a human being, who they are as a person. What are their goals? What are their ambitions? How do they communicate? I have a lot of different questions where I test them. You know, it's not a pass or fail thing. It's just a how well are we going to communicate? How well can you demonstrate with words your value to me? And that's what's difficult about communication, is we all come to, you know, meetings in our life, like you and I are here right now, and you have connotations for your vocabulary and I have different connotations for my vocabulary. And so that's why people can seemingly say the same thing, but they don't match up. And so I spend a lot of time in the interview really uncovering how they communicate, and then what do they value? Do they value the same types of things that I do, which would make them a good fit for the culture here?
Right. And I guess there's probably some pre-steps to that. You know, like you said, making someone a good fit for the culture. You have to first even know what that culture is.
Right. Yeah. So if you don't know what the culture of your business is, then you've really got some thinking to do. Start with Why is a great book by Simon Sinek. he's written several other books since then that I'm sure have improved on that concept. They're on my shelf over here, but I haven't got to them yet. But if you don't know the culture of your business, then I mean, you're hiring people, if you're going to do it anyways, but I would really recommend making sure you nail that down before you scale too far, because once your organization gets to a certain size, if you don't know what the culture is, then no one else in your organization is, and then there's going to be no soul binding everyone together, because that's what culture is. Culture is the soul of your business, and it's intangible and it's difficult, and that's why people have a hard time with it. But that's the thing that gets people to fill in the gaps where you've not set explicit instructions on what to do or what not to do or whatever. It's how you empower people to then think for themselves and take ownership of the business because they care about this culture that you all created together.
Right, man. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Let's jump into the final four here. If you're to distill everything you know about the hiring process, what's one piece of advice you would give to somebody?
It's the interview. It's being able to be present during the interview, having done the right preparation for it, having good questions, using Socratic questioning, which is always asking a clarifying question after you get a response. So for instance, hey, what's some of your most important values? And they say something like integrity. Don't be like, oh, okay, yeah, integrity, I like that. Be like, why integrity? Tell me, what do you mean by that? And so asking those questions on every single question, again, it's why I say take it, you block out an hour for it, is that it's the interview process. That's the 1 hour or however long you take that you're, and you might have two interviews perhaps, but at max, then you're talking about 2, maybe 3 hours tops that you're spending with this person, trying to understand whether or not you guys can be a family, because you're going to spend a lot of time around this person. We all spend, you know, several hours a week, you know, working. And lots of times it's as much time with the work, you know, your workplace colleagues as it is your family. And so make the most of that time by, again, being present and asking good questions.
Right, man, that's awesome. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Right now I'm trying to get back into the rental game. I sold my last rental last year. And so I've got some money that I'm sitting on that I'm like, okay, I need to get back into it. I kind of took a pause because I was, you know, running for city council. And so that's a very, that was a whirlwind. I'd never ran for public office before. So I didn't want to put too much on my plate. But now in 2021, I'm like, okay, it's time to get back into the rental game. So I guess that's kind of where I'm at with that now.
Right. So outside of the consulting business, now you're on city council, and then you're also looking to get back in as an active investor in real estate. That's awesome. When it comes to giving back, what's one way you're making the world a better place?
One thing I do is I volunteer at a local food pantry. And they're going there every Friday, pretty much every Friday for about the last 4 years or so. But then, you know, I really do consider public service a great way to give back, to learn about our government, especially now. You know, I think people are starting to pay more attention to local governments. Local governments have been having a lot of impact on the election, on COVID and all that. So understanding how your local government works and playing some part in it is part of the American dream. You know, it's part of what makes America such a special place. And, you know, I'm 32 years old and I was able to run for an office here and I got it. And so I think that if you have the opportunity to get involved in some way, there's boards and commissions that report to the full council that you can get on much easier. It's not a public, you know, not an election you have to run for. You can just walk in and start to get involved. So I consider that kind of really the way I'm probably giving back the most now. So.
Right. No, that's awesome. That's
it doesn't really pay. You might think that politicians make money, but that you got to get up a few levels before you get to that spot.
Right. No, I understand. That's awesome. Danny, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
The best way is to shoot me an email. You can go to my website, but right now it's campaign oriented. But my email address is Danny, my first name, D-A-N-N-Y, at, and then it's my first name and last name, DannyColeman.me. So Danny@DannyColeman.me. Shoot me an email there. I'd be happy to set up a time to chat if you'd like that. I'd be happy to send you my process. I've got a lot of different resources. I've got templates for everything that I've described here. And I'd be happy to share that with anybody who needs it.
Awesome. Danny, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Certainly. Thank you, Sam. Have a good one.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.